Hey, welcome back to Crimes and Closets. This is Beth in my closet from North Carolina.
Mrs. Christie in my closet in St. Louis. And we have other friends with us because this is our Halloween collab. So we've got our friends from What Happens in the Woods and our friend Cass. So take it away, guys.
Hi, this is Cass from In the Closet in Washington. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Mm-hmm. And this is Jess from the closet in the woods, I guess.
I'm here too.
And Bryce. Well, I wasn't going to speak for you. It's 2023. We don't need to speak for each other. Okay. I love you.
Welcome in, guys. Welcome in to the closet.
Welcome in. Hi. Bryce.
Yay.
Killer bees. Why are you That's not more right. excited about this right now?
I am ecstatic.
It's me and you. Me and That's you, right. bro.
That's right.
I hope you're super excited. We are very excited. We have our friends here from the Pacific Northwest that have a fantastic podcast called What Happens in the Woods. If you guys haven't checked them out, I mean, like, you're old news because we've been talking about them for years. This is fourth annual Halloween collab. We're super excited. We have a great theme. So if you haven't already, stop what you're doing and go and listen to their episode that dropped on Friday, which is on the What Happens in the Woods podcast feed on all your platforms. Christy and Jess just dropped a great episode, and I'm not even going to tell you what it's about because you're old news. So go listen to that and come back and listen to this episode. It's going to be me and Bryce, and we are going to talk about some super fun things. Bryce, do you want to tell them what the theme is about?
Oh, yes. The theme is horror movies based on true crime.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
It has been so fun to research this.
Oh my
for
God.
Me. I don't know how
there
you
was
feel.
So
but...
many to like choose from.
I know.
That was the hardest part, was to like pare it all down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally. I love the one I chose, by the way.
Uh-oh. I hope it's not the same.
No, it's not the same.
Oh, come on. We had a meeting about this, Bryce.
We
come
had
on.
A meeting.
The people know.
The secret is out we about know. The quarterly meeting, people.
Okay, so we would love to extend an invitation to you to go first, Bryce, since you're a guest on the show. So
I
if
feel
you
so
want...
honored.
We're so
we're
honored.
We're following from our lovely host that allowed us to go first last week.
Or Thanks, the Jess.
You're welcome.
So hit us with your best shot.
I pivoted at the last second. I'm
oh
not
no,
gonna lie.
Really?
Like, literally, yeah.
Oh my gosh, because I knew what your other one was originally and I was very freaked out by it. So what's happening now?
Wait, which one did you think of?
The birds.
Oh, it's the birds.
Oh! That's what you said.
No,
it's psych.
I was actually watching another movie yesterday, and I thought that would be, I was like, you know what? No, let me just stick with my original. And the other movie I was watching, which you guys should totally watch, it came out in 1971, called 10 Rillington Place. Oh my gosh. It's awesome.
I'll write this down. 10 okay. Rillington Place.
Yeah. It takes place in England. And it's
a
movie.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
They got anyway. The accents.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm in.
And it happened in like, in the 40s, like right after World War II. Anyway.
But also I have to say, you guys have to go and watch the trailer for it first.
Okay.
It is like nothing I've seen before. I mean, movie trailers have come a long way since one. I don't think let it deter you from watching the movie, though.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
good to know.
My fear lives and dies with spiders and birds. So since you said that's what you were going to do, I've been really anxious. I've never watched the movie.
Oh, no.
It no,
messed me
I
up
can't
as a
get
kid.
Through it.
Wait, you've
I've
never
tried
seen a bird?
To No, I've tried to watch it. I'm really scared of birds. I've tried to watch it and have like felt nauseous just knowing what was coming. Not even before the scary things happened. Mm-hmm. I can't watch it. It's just not. Oh, I can't do
it's
it.
One of my
Ask Christine.
Movies.
I was at her house and her son has a very sweet bird. He's very mm-hmm. sweet. And he's just a normal bird. And I almost vomited.
Like, oh, you yeah, I have a picture of him on
he's
her
not even
leg.
Like a crow, like a no. creepy black bird. Like he's.
I have
just
a picture
like,
of him on her leg, and she's like looking and like pointing at it, like, "Oh my gosh, why is it here?"
Wait, what kind of bird is he?
He's a cockatiel. He's a sweet. Yeah, oh, okay. He talks to you, and he's very sweet. And I just can't. He flies around.
Who he was
because he's a bird.
Oh yeah,
the wings
at me.
Yeah,
birds are just government drones. Let's be honest.
Oh wow! Wow. Okay.
They're unpredictable.
Takes this movie review to a whole new level.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, what those are scary birds. They're like black crows. They're scary and creepy.
I won't get into the details for you, Beth, but a lot of things that happen around the movie is what I'll get into because I don't want to spoil it for you.
Someday
I'm
you
not
might
watching
watch
it. Don't worry. <on. laughs>
I will. You know what? Honestly, if you, I understand the fear aspect of it. So I mean, I get it. But I actually saw the movie for the first time in a like a movie appreciation course that I took, and it was the like. When you look at it from that aspect, it takes the horror aspect out of it. If you look at it from the aspect of appreciating the cinematography and the way that they did these things and were able to capture that, it was better for me to watch it that way.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm
she's
just
like, no,
nope.
Peace out. That's fine. Good for you.
I'm good, but tell me all the things.
All right. So here we go. So you may not know this, but Alfred Hitchcock's 1963 horror classic, The Birds, was actually based on real events. This was the movie that he followed up Psycho with. So, you know, it had to be like on a different level. You know what I mean? Like that one was pretty scary, but he had to follow it up with an even like more like psych, you know.
You were going to say Psycho movie?
Yeah, Psycho movie. So the event was actually in August 18th, 1961, and it was in the issue of a Santa Cruz Sentinel and had the following headline, Seabird Invasion Hits Coastal Homes. The story was written by Trebing, tells of what appears to be a coordinated attack by thousands of birds called Sooty Shearwaters. That's the type of bird that was in this coastal town. And they're a type of seabird, and they actually happen on two coastal towns early in the morning. So Trebing wrote, residents, especially in the Pleasure Point and the Capitola area, were awakened at 3 a.m. today by rain of birds. Slammed against their homes, dead and stunned birds littered the streets and roads in the foggy early dawn. Startled by the invasion, residents rushed out on their lawns with flashlights, then rushed back inside as the birds flew towards their light.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
So you said Santa Cruz. This happened like Capitola, California.
Yeah, this is in Northern California.
Oh, damn. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So much like the movie, the cause of this was completely unknown. They didn't know what was going on, but it was clear that something was going very, very wrong. Now scientists believe that they may have found out the answer to the mystery. And it was in 2010 when they believed they found out what was going on.
That's a long time after.
Yeah. So two scientists, Sybil Bargu, B-A-R-G-U, I'm probably butchering that, and Anna Garcia found toxic algae in regions of the open ocean. These algae blooms included a diatom called pseudo.
Words are hard, Bryce. It's okay. Yes.
Words are very hard.
Words are very hard. Pseudo Nitzschia. N-I-T-Z-S-H-I-A. Nitzschia. Say that five times fast.
Bless you.
No.
Yes.
No, thank you.
So this diatom produces a nasty neurotoxin called domoic acid, or DA for short. Pseudonitsitia is also commonly found in a coastal area where it can be more easily, it can easily make its way into the food chain.
It's very interesting because I would have thought, because like birds are like very sensitive to the magnetics of the earth. So I would have assumed that it would be something like a glitch in the matrix or something with the magnetic. No.
Like a lunar eclipse or something like that.
Yeah.
Like more understandable than like an algae.
Yeah.
It's never this most simplest answer. It's always the weirdest one. Like that's what we gravitate to. Yeah. The matrix.
It's true. It's true, though, that you say birds are very sensitive to that. And that they're freaky little winged animals.
Little flying demons.
No. No, they're just smarter than us, and I don't want anything to do with them.
Yeah. No, it gets even better when I explain it to you, Beth.
Oh, no. please explain.
So the two scientists were from... an ocean environmentalist of the Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. And what they revealed was the behavior could be attributed to the plankton that they ate. It had been poisoned with this domoic acid. So it was reported in the USA Today. The story says that the researchers examined the stomach contents of various animals in the area in 1961 and found that 79% of the plankton were infected with this toxin-producing type of algae. It would cause nerve damage that led to the confusion and seizures and death. Sybil Bargu is quoted as saying, "I am pretty convinced that the birds were poisoned."
Oh my God.
So they just like, they were all poisoned and were affected by this and just like dove down.
what they were basically saying is like, it was in the algae that the plankton ate. And then all these, those birds ate all the plankton, and then so as they flew inland they started getting sick, and it happened right away.
Were they seagulls?
They are a type of seagull.
Those are my worst feared ones.
So this is a little bit funny. So call it cruel, but the article says that some of the poison plankton was discovered in the stomach of turtles.
Oh no. Are they diving down on people too?
No, but I don't think the movie would have been same if like he would have made a movie about slow moving turtles, and it wouldn't have had the same effect. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna need that movie made. Another thing happening for the turtles.
Picturing is Nemo with all the turtles, and they're like poisoned, and I don't know. Anyway,
but you know what's gonna happen? You know what's gonna happen though? Is someone in Hollywood is gonna make that stupid movie? Sharknado?
Right?
We're gonna get it.
And there's my husband and my kids have just been watching The Meg. The Meg and The Meg 2. It just came out, right?
Yeah.
They're crazy.
Yeah. So, well, that's still crazy to me because we don't even know what's down there. That's one of the things that scares me about the ocean is how deep it is. We haven't even explored it yet. It could be possible that there is one down there.
It could be a vibe. A vibe. They think that there's alien bases under the ocean.
Oh, God.
I'm sure there are. That's a different podcast, though. So a little background about the movie. So the bird was actually adapted from a Daphne du Maurier short story of the same name, and Hitchcock enlisted the author Evan Hunter to write the screenplay, and he gave him free rein to write that what he envisioned without worrying about the technical consideration of how things would actually be staged and shot. So he just said, hey, write a movie based on this short story. Don't worry about how it comes out. Because I don't think there was a lot of dialogue in that movie.
No, there really wasn't.
There really wasn't.
You're right. Yeah. It was just scary. Get out. It was just scary birds.
You never watched it, Beth, so you shut up. You don't have no idea.
I've seen so many times. terrified me.
Well, so Hitchcock.
It's just black crows that fly over things and attack them. No.
Hitchcock. No. Why can't I say his name? Hitchcock didn't actually write the story.
That's crazy, actually.
Interesting. I don't actually appreciate that he gets all the recognition for it.
Well, the thing, and there was a piece in the article too, and it can't be confirmed, but he called the newspaper that reported the article and just wanted to know all about it. So he called like the day after that article, and he wanted to know every detail. He talked to the writers and everything. It wasn't confirmed. Like, I got a lot of this information from the newspaper and a lot of this information from the memoirs of what's her name, Tippi Hedren, who was the lead actress.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And a lot of it, I left a lot of it out. I mean, I can tell you a little bit about some of the other stuff later, but it wouldn't be scary.
Or would it?
Wow. It would.
Or would it?
So he didn't give Evan Hunter a lot of guidance on how to script the movie. As it would turn out, well, the consideration how things would actually be staged and shot, as it would turn out, the technical problems would be very significant.
As you would imagine.
Yeah. So the original plan for the movie for the bird attacks was to use artificial birds, like motorized. They would have motorized wings, and the studio actually invested over $200,000, which in today's market economy would be $2 million.
Wow.
Oh wow.
So, but
just
after
to
testing,
not have real life birds, guys.
That's right.
Because they're scary.
What's even scarier is what happens after. So after they built these birds, these fake birds, and tested them, it became clear that the mechanical birds looked completely fake on screen. So the plan had to be scrapped. So they invested, they built them, and they actually still kind of used them for other scenes, but they didn't use them primarily for like the attack scene.
Okay.
Did they use them for like that scene in like where she was like in the telephone
booth?
The payphone booth?
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, because they literally had them like hitting it and falling off and like flapping and it yeah, anyway.
Yeah, they did use that. Those were fake birds, Beth. Don't worry.
There's also no telephone booths anywhere anymore.
There's a story about that too. I can go into. I didn't include it in here, but there it goes along with other stories. So instead of using the fake birds, animal trainer Ray Berwick was now tasked with catching thousands of live wild gulls, crows, ravens, sparrows, and finches for the scenes, which came with its own set of complications.
I bet.
So they started catching them, right? So crows and ravens are highly intelligent, and Berwick and his crew were never able to catch more than one or two from a flock before the rest would catch on, and the crows and ravens would actually start posting lookouts.
Oh.
That's how intelligent those birds are.
Watch out, they're trying to get us.
So yeah, so when they would they'd catch one or two of a flock of ravens or crows, and then they'd start posting lookouts, and they just like fly off. Like, yep, nope, see you later. So in desperation, the studio advertised a bounty for $10 per bird to professional trappers nationwide, but this too proved fruitless. Finally, Berwick located a massive rookery of tens of thousands of birds in Arizona, where he and his crew wore all black clothes and painted their faces black, and were able to sneak up on the sleeping crows at night and catch them using nets. In total, over 25,000 live birds were used during the filming.
Were they hurt?
No, that was in part of the stories too. Like the SPCA was on scene. I keep looking at Beth's face.
I know. She's like making all these like she's vomiting.
She's traumatized.
Talking about the flapping.
I haven't even talked about the flapping yet.
You did.
So once captured, of course, these wild animals weren't always inclined to cooperate with their handlers. As Berwick told in an interview with Cine Fantastique in 1980, people on the set, quickly learned to fear the birds' vicious attacks, especially the gulls. So the seagulls had about, they injured 12 to 13 crew members and put them in the hospital in one day from bites and scratches, he said.
Thank you.
The seagulls would deliberately go for your eyes.
Oh my God.
And he is quoted, I got bitten in the eye region at least three times. And Tippi, the lead actress, she actually got a pretty nasty gash when one of the birds hit her above her right eye.
Wait, isn't that in the movie too?
Yeah.
Yeah, they left it, right?
Yeah, they left it. So.
Yeah. It's pretty realistic.
Yes.
It was my fire.
If a bird attacked me one time, my life would be over.
Yeah.
I would be
it
a
hasn't happened
person.
Yet, Beth, so you're okay.
Be a
you're okay.
Person mm-hmm. If it made contact with my face.
So you haven't seen it, but the final scene is where she's in an attic. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she's surrounded by birds.
You so the guys final are scene, nodding Tippi, your heads.
Tippi Hedren went through hell. In the final scene of the film, her character, Melanie, enters an attic bedroom alone to find it full of birds, which immediately descend on her in a fury. Hedren had been told that mechanical birds would be used for this scene, but when she arrived on the set for the first day of shooting, she discovered that this was untrue. A cage was built around the bedroom, and because they were in fact using live birds.
Oh my God.
Yes. Uh-oh. So she didn't know that. She had no idea. So over the next week, this is where it gets a little weird. So over the next week, handlers were wearing elbow length protective gauntlets, literally hurled live birds at her for 8 hours straight.
No.
How are they being? Did the SPCA didn't do anything back then? Like, that's not...
As long as they weren't hurt is what it was. They were just kind of like not... They weren't like football throwing them at her. You know what I mean? They were just kind of like tossing them at her.
Oh, my God.
I can see why at like the end of the movie, she was like... Her character was like traumatized. I bet half of that was just not acting.
It's not. And I was about to get into it. So
birds are scary.
Oh, no. So the birds were trained to peck her. And since they'd so recently been caught from the wild, they actually needed no encouragement to do so. So, quote, it was brutal and ugly and relentless, she recalls in her memoir. Cary Grant, who was visiting the set one day that week, reportedly told her, quote, you're the bravest woman I've ever seen.
Dang.
Because this was 8 hours that they did this. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah. On day five of the week of filming the bedroom scene, I can't believe they shot this thing for a week. And this is out of her, like, her memoir. So... On day five of filming the bedroom scene, the birds were actually tied to her.
What?
Oh, yeah.
My God.
I'm done.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
They were pecking her mercilessly as her character lay helpless on the floor. By the afternoon, Hedren was physically and emotionally drained. And when one of the birds pecked her face dangerously close to her eye, she writes, I finally snapped. She cried out, I'm done, and she sat on the floor sobbing and exhausted as the birds were untied. That evening, Hedren saw a doctor who ordered a week's rest, and Hitchcock actually attempted to refuse her the time off. Now, you know, this took place in the 60s, so laws were different back then. Her doctor ordered a week's rest, arguing... Hitchcock attempted to stop her time off, and he argued that no one else, they had no one else to film. But the doctor insisted, so she took the week off. She spent the entire week either sleeping or half conscious, but returned to the set the following Monday with her head held high. And she was determined to finish the film, and she did finish the film.
So there was
a little bit of a backstory to why all that happened, and she thought that Alfred Hitchcock was mad at her. And so there, I mean, there were some things in her memoirs that,
what do you mean he was mad at, and so he created this whole movie of birds that were going to attack her?
No. So right before the bedroom scene,
yeah,
he drove her home in his limo, and then he threw himself on her.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, and she like basically like, so he was giving her a ride back to her hotel. Right before they arrived, he like threw himself on her and started kissing her neck. And she basically said no.
Yeah.
And so she thinks part of the reason that the filming was so intense was because he was like mad at her for thwarting her his advances.
Mm. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. It's old Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like there was even another actress that was like, hey, you know, that's just how it is in Hollywood. And like I said, it was the 60s and it's definitely a different time. But I couldn't corroborate that. Like I couldn't, there were no other sources that, but yeah, there was there were other things that she said in her memoirs, like that she, he had her followed home. And people were watching her like home and just crazy things like that. But
wow. Yeah.
So I think she may be right on that final scene. Like he may have been mad at her. Like who shoots that for a week?
Yeah.
That's a long time.
You can't mean to tell me that took more than 8 hours.
I'm not
especially with birds that don't need any prompting to act wild because they're wild birds.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and they're crows crazy. Too. It's not even you're talking about like Christie's son's bird. It was a perfectly nice bird.
Yeah.
These birds are like very large and black and with longer beaks and
that scavengers. Movie screwed
like Phoenix
me up
is
a
not
kid.
A scavenger. Phoenix just wants you to pet him.
Yeah.
These birds are savage.
Yeah. But look, they were under neurotoxin.
Right, they're sick.
I mean, that's wild.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, the birds, honestly, I laughed at that movie a lot. Like, I did not find it scary. I laughed at it a lot, but now knowing the little backstory, that makes it a little scary. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, well, for me as a kid, I think I saw it in the 80s. Like, I was little, and like I remember. Yeah, I lived on Travis still, and I remember watching it. So that was like 80 to 85. We still lived there. So I wasn't more than, couldn't have been older than 10 when I, you know, or even younger than that. I don't remember when I was. But then I went back and watched it and was like, whoa, that's horrible. Like it's bad. Like now what, looking at the effects, it's bad. But that movie no doubtly had lasting effects on like the crew, but also future filmmaking, you know, like. It may be gross to some people, and it, like I said, it scared the hell out of me as a kid. Like,
yeah.
I think I watched the sky for a long time, even driving, you know, like looking up. And but undoubtedly, it had a positive effect on other, you know, future filmmakers in that genre.
That's another one that I wish I would go back and watch because I was definitely petrified when I first saw it as a kid. Yeah. But I feel like I would now be like,
I just kind of glimpsed through the, like, because it has the chapters in there and I just kind of skimmed through it. Just like, yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that being more scary.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
I mean, wow. Yeah. I don't know. It like thinking about it, like just from the effects standpoint, like they did a good job for the time. For sure.
I don't know how it would have gotten any better.
Yeah, like the gas station blowing up, the telephone booth thing, that was really like intense. And then when all the school children and her are like running away and they have to walk, like it looked really real for the 60s.
Let me tell you, I just actually sent you guys a text, but the school children. There's a church in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I visited that church this summer.
No,
and took pictures in front of it. Yes, because it's in Bodega Bay. And we were there to run our half marathon. And the guy who we rented the house from was like, oh, well, if you go drive to Bodega Bay, blah, 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 you'll pass by the house from the birds. And I was like, well, we're doing it. I don't even care if we weren't doing that. I'm going to do it. And so,
oh my gosh, we're going to post it, guys.
And took pictures in front of the church.
And it looks the same.
Oh, yeah.
Unreal. Yeah. I knew they filmed it there, but I didn't know the actual story hit, you know, that where the background happened.
And Beth, just as a fun fact, there was actually The Birds to Land's End. They made a sequel. I mean, it wasn't a Hitchcock film, but yeah, they actually tried to make a sequel.
She won't be catching that one.
No? Okay.
She's not watching any of it.
Hard pass.
I can't do things that fly at me.
No, I actually really see the sequel. I'm not going to lie.
It's good?
What? No, I haven't seen it. I want to. Oh. Especially after this conversation.
Well, yeah. Okay. It came out in 1994. I don't know. I didn't even look. But yeah, I'm sure it's out there to watch.
Hmm. You let me know, Cass.
I'll tell you everything.
Don't.
She'll make vomit noises and faces.
I can't do things flapping at me at high speeds. I just cannot. They're unpredictable and weird. But I do have a horror story for you guys that is real life, if you want to hear it.
No. Do tell.
Are you done with birds? Okay, great. So this movie is like pretty much every 80s and 90s kid's favorite horror movie, or at least it's on the list. So if you're thinking of like 80s and 90s horror movies, you're thinking of Texas Chainsaw and
Freddy Krueger.
Freddy Krueger and Scream.
Yes.
So we're going to talk to you about the infamous Scream.
And a lot of people is always in a different category for me, though.
It is a different category.
Really? Yeah. And Freddy Krueger and the Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, because I think it was a little bit different because it was like, I think, yeah, it wasn't like a Nightmare on Elm Street or a Jason kind of thing. It was like real life, like, it could happen.
Well, it was the psychological thriller aspect of it.
Yeah, but it was almost like a comedy to me.
No, it really is, though. They really did a good job of like pairing it with the comedic timing that all of those actors were capable of giving.
Mm-hmm.
Funny that you say that. So Scream is actually notoriously known for a horror movie that makes fun of horror movies.
Right.
And it is known for like reviving slasher films because after like the 70s, like Freddy Krueger and Jason and Texas Chainsaw, they kind of died. Mm-hmm. And then you had Scream that came back and was like, yeah, but this is funny. So let's revive it. And it kind of did that in the 90s. So that's kind of what it's known for. And it actually was released just before Christmas.
I remember that. Which was
really controversial because who releases a horror movie on December 20th?
Yeah, I remember that.
So well, I just remember really back in the day, that's when like movies like came out. Like I remember over Christmas break, that's what we did. We would go to movies. Mm-hmm. That's our big thing. Oh, the movies are coming out. We gotta go. Yeah.
Thanksgiving or Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they did that. So December 1996, enter Scream. And it actually, so nobody thought it was going to do well. Everybody was like, who's releasing a horror movie during the Christmas season? But it hit box offices with like a bang. It grossed millions of dollars. It was like a cult following flick for sure. It was written by a man named Kevin Williamson, who will come back later, and it was directed by Wes Craven, who was super big in horror films. So again, it's known for being a horror movie about horror movies. It's like known for reviving all of that stuff. There are six victims in the Scream movie who are stalked, stabbed, and mutilated by their killer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know about Scream, stop what you're doing right now because I'm about to spoiler all the things. Go watch it. In the movie, there are two killers who ended up being friends of the victims who were obsessed with slasher films and wanted to act out fantasies that they had seen from those movies. So this is funny for you, Christy. In the movie, one of the heroines is actually Monica Geller.
Yes, it is.
From Friends. Mm-hmm. Courtney Cox is like, she's the news broadcaster who actually brings the killers to light. She's great. She gets the crap beat out of her. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. So there have been four sequels made of the movie. So there's five total. And the original Scream house, where the movie was actually filmed, is available on Airbnb for you to rent, and which I will link in the show notes should you want to go and stay.
Can we go?
Beautiful.
One? The house where they end the movie at, nope. Or the house where Sydney lives?
The original house in which the murders take place.
Oh.
So the murderers.
Okay, yeah,
house,
I can't be going there. Nope.
Yep. Nope. And all of this takes place in 1990. So just bring yourselves back to 1990, in which things were wholesome and fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So on Sunday, August 26th of 1990, the parents of 17-year-old Christina Powell drove to her apartment that she shared with her new college friend, 18-year-old Sonia Larson. Both women were enrolled as freshmen at the University of Florida in Gainesville, and classes were scheduled to start the next day, but neither one of the parents had been able to reach either one of their girls in a few days. So they were getting very worried. They were in contact. And so one of the parents lived close and they sent them over to check on the girls. Christina at that time was interested in architecture and Sonia was studying engineering. So Christina's parents drove to their Gainesville apartment, knocked on the door, and no one answered. So they called the police, and the building manager and the maintenance worker let the officers inside. As soon as they entered the apartment, they realized that they were in the middle of a crime scene. There was blood everywhere. They found Christina partially clothed and laying on the living room floor. She had been raped and stabbed multiple times in the back. After her death, her body had been severely mutilated and posed. Sonia, her roommate, was upstairs in a bedroom and was found nude, lying on her back in her bed with her feet on the floor. She had been raped and also stabbed in the back multiple times. Her body had also been mutilated and posed after her death. So I'm not going to go into like the mutilation of their bodies, but it's too much even for us. But just know it was bad. It was mutilation. Mm-hmm. So there were evidence that both women had been duct taped around their wrists and mouth, but no duct tape was found at the scene. Both of the bodies had been cleaned with laundry detergent after they were killed. Semen was present at both of the scenes, and the killer had wedged a screwdriver in the door jamb to gain entry to the apartment. So they could tell that there were like screwdriver marks in the door jamb, but no screwdriver was found at the scene, and there was no knife or murder weapon found. It was determined that they had been dead for about 48 to 72 hours. So it had been a couple days since they had been killed. It was very gruesome. It was very bloody. And it was very clear that the killer that had left the women had done so in a way that whenever someone found them, it would provide like a shock value.
Hmm.
So like he posed them in a way that whoever walked in would, you know, it would be shocking to them. 8 hours later, on Monday, August 27th, police were called to the apartment of 18-year-old Krista Hoyt. So Krista was attending Santa Fe Community College and aspired to be in law enforcement. And at the time, she was working part-time at the Alucha County Sheriff's Office as a records clerk. So she failed to show up for her shift, and her coworkers were very concerned by this because it wasn't like her. So they went for a welfare check. And when police got to her apartment, they found that her door had been pried open with what looked like a screwdriver.
Hmm.
Krista was found posed, lying on her bed with her feet on the floor. She had been sexually assaulted, stabbed in the back, and mutilated after her death. Her body had actually been disemboweled, and she was decapitated, and her head was placed on a shelf that seemed to be like looking down at her posed body.
Oh my God.
Some of the officers that found her body were actually her friends from her work.
No.
Did she work at the record?
Oh, yes. God. Police believed that although Krista's cause of death was stabbing, that she had actually been tortured prior to her death. So that was very sad. Semen and hairs were also found at her crime scene. So because of the close proximity and the similarities to these murders, police immediately knew they had a serial killer on their hands. Also, on the same day that Krista was found, there was a bank robbery that was reported nearby. So police like followed the person that they felt committed the bank robbery. There was like a man who was like running around town and he ran into the woods. He got away, but he actually led them to a campsite. And at that campsite, police found the bag that was used in the bank robbery. And they also found some money, and the money was stained with a red dye because the bank teller had like put in a dye pack.
Yeah.
When the robbery was taking place. And so all of the money was like stained with that. So they took items from this campsite, you know, into evidence, thinking that they would later find the bank robbery, which we'll come back later. So the following day, on Tuesday the 28th, police were called for a welfare check at the apartment of some high school students who were friends, Tracy Pauls and Manuel Tabota. Tracy was 23 years old. She was a pre-law student at the University of Florida, majoring in political science. Manny was also a 23-year-old student at Santa Fe College, and he planned to study architecture. So both of them were seniors at like one at a community college, one at the University of Florida. Police found forced entry at their apartment, again, with what looked like pry marks from a screwdriver. Manny, who was the male victim, he was found stabbed to death in his first floor bed, which kind of indicated to them that he had been attacked while he was sleeping. So he had multiple defensive wounds, and it was very clear that he had tried to fight his attacker, but his body was kind of left as it fell. So it didn't seem like after he was killed, anything happened after that. He wasn't posed. He wasn't mutilated, nothing like that. So they kind of felt like the police kind of felt like he was not an intended victim. Tracy, his roommate, on the other hand, who was a female, was stabbed in the back. She was raped, mutilated, and posed on the floor of her bedroom. There were traces of duct tape on her wrists and mouth, and her lower body had been washed down with soap. Semen was also found at her crime scene. So now, at this point, there are 5 murders in 4 days in this very small college town. So the FBI was called in, and law enforcement said that it looked like they had another Ted Bundy on their hands, because at that point, Ted Bundy had just been executed the year before in Florida.
Right.
So everyone was freaking out. They all thought there was a serial killer on the loose, and they were targeting college students. A lot of the students left. They went back to their parents' home. Since it was the first week of classes, the colleges and universities extended their deadlines to like drop classes so that students, if they wanted to, could leave and go home to their families. The University of Florida actually increased their security and temporarily offered campus dorms to students who lived off campus. So they like increased their on-campus security and then said, if you live off campus, come stay here. So that you can watch you, you can be with people. New security programs were set up all over town. There were toll-free hotlines that were established so that students could call home for free instead of like paying long distance. This is 1990. No one long knows what long distance is
on the landline.
Right. And then gun and knife and ammo sales obviously increased. Pawn shops were totally sold out. Everyone was just trying to protect themselves or leave town. Everyone was a suspect, and a bunch of tips came in. At one point, the list of people on police's radar totaled 675 people.
Wow. It's just a little list, right?
Honestly, you think of the population, though, probably, that was in that town, that probably is a very small list compared to how many people lived in the area.
This town was really small at the time, though.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So a multi-agency task force conducted hundreds of interviews. They sifted through 18,000 pieces of evidence and ran multiple, like, DNA samples. So DNA testing in 1990, it did exist, definitely. But it was in infancy. So what they could actually learn from any DNA that they ran was very, like, limited.
Mm-hmm.
So after about 48 hours, police named a suspect based on tips that had come in. So this was 18-year-old University of Florida student. His name was Edward Humphrey. So he was known at the time for wearing camo and fatigues and walking around campus late at night with a hunting knife. And he exhibited very odd behavior. He suffered from pretty severe mental illness and at the time was not taking his medication properly. And he had very intense facial scarring, which was from a car accident that had happened to him like a couple years before, but he looked pretty strange. So people called this in and police caught hold of it and they named him officially as a suspect. So his home was searched. And they found stacks of magazines of like guns and knives and sexually explicit women, you know, things like that. They didn't have enough evidence to arrest him, but coincidentally, at the time, he had an altercation with his grandmother and ended up being arrested for that and was sentenced to 10 months in prison.
Mm. Unrelated to murders.
Yeah. He just ended up being in prison anyway. So the town at that point was very relieved because they thought, okay, this is the guy. He's in prison. We don't have to worry about it for at least a few months. But the police were not convinced that this was their guy. So they continued to investigate it. However, after he was arrested, the murder stopped. Oh. So we had 5 murders in 4 days, and all of a sudden he was arrested and nothing. So then police received back the DNA results that they had gotten from the crime scenes, and it showed that the killer was a secretor. Do you guys know what that means?
A secretor?
Secretor. Yes. So what that means is that your blood type and DNA is secreted in other bodily fluids. Like your sweat or your semen or your pee or whatever. That's a thing.
Yeah.
It is. How do you know if you're a secretor?
You have to be tested. There's testing. 80% of people are secretors, by the way.
Oh.
So most of us are going to fall in that category. But this killer that they had found his semen at the crime scenes was a secretor. Thankfully for them, so they were able to get his blood type, and he showed up as blood type B in all three crime scenes. So Ed Humphrey, the guy that they had suspected, was not blood type B. He had another blood type. So they knew.
And was he not a secretor?
Well, I don't know about that. But he wasn't type B blood. So they knew that it was not, either it was not him or he had an accomplice. One or the other. Like, it wasn't this Ed guy. So no murders are taking place, and the town of Gainesville was like trying to get back to normal. We've got the suspect in custody. He may or may not be the killer. We're just going to move on. 5 months later, in January of 1991, a tip was called in to Crime Stoppers, which I really loved to hear that Crime Stoppers was a thing in 1991. Like, you guys have been going a long time. So a woman called in and said that she was from Shreveport, Louisiana. She said that a triple murder in her hometown had reminded her of the murders that happened in Gainesville, Florida. In November of 1989, three people in Shreveport were found dead in their home. So in these murders, a screwdriver was used to gain entry to the home. And inside was 55-year-old William Grissom, his daughter, 24-year-old Julie Grissom, and his grandson and Julie's nephew, 8-year-old Sean. All three were found stabbed to death.
Oh, God.
Julie had also been sexually assaulted, mutilated, and posed on her bed with her feet on the floor. So it was very clear that she was the killer's target. In all of these murders, there were very glaring patterns. So the way the murderer had gained entry to the home, the fact that he had targeted young college women, the way he mutilated the bodies, the way he posed the bodies. So because of the similarities, the tipster believed that whoever killed the five students in Gainesville was also the same person who had killed this family in Shreveport, where she was from. And she thought that she knew who it was.
So she said
that her and her husband had gone to church with a man in Shreveport who was a known criminal. He had been arrested multiple times for robbery and other situations. And in January of 1991, he had actually gone on the run for attempting to murder his father. And no one knew where he was. So he had made several odd statements to them in the times before he had gone on the run. Like, he liked to stick people with knives. And that he had had, like, sexual, voyeuristic feelings towards people. Very weird comments, right? And she said that this man was 36-year-old Danny Rowling. So Danny had grown up in Shreveport, Louisiana, and had a very abusive father who was a local cop in the area. He was known from a young age for being a peeping Tom and admittedly became very sexually aroused at watching people without their knowledge.
Peeping Toms freak me out.
A little bit.
Yeah, but it's just gross.
Like, legitimately, also, right now, my windows are open, like the blinds are, and I'm like wondering if somebody can look at me right now.
I literally thought you were like, there's somebody staring at me from some other house right now. I was like, Christy, get out.
Yeah. She doesn't seem quite as alarmed as she should. Right. They're very creepy. So this guy, he had attempted to have a career in the Air Force, but was discharged after only a year because he was experiencing or exhibiting delinquent behavior and he had drug and alcohol issues. He had been arrested several times for robbing gas stations and grocery stores and had been released from prison and then moved back in with his parents. So this was in like late 1988. He moved back in with his parents, like I said, in Shreveport, and an incident occurred with his father in May of 1990, which resulted in him shooting his father twice. Oh. Once in the stomach and once in the head before going on the run.
Oh, wow.
His father lived, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I was just going to ask. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he lived. He survived. So now police have this connection with unmistakably similar situations, the Shreveport triple murder and then the five Gainesville murders. So they began looking into this Danny Rowling as a possible suspect. They found that Danny was actually already in prison for armed robbery at a supermarket about 40 miles away from Gainesville that had occurred the week after the last murder, which would explain why the murders had stopped. So they could now place Danny Rowland in the Gainesville area during the time that the five college murders had occurred. Since Danny was also known to be a robber, police started thinking back to that bank robbery that had happened in the midst of the Gainesville murders. Do you guys remember that? And it led them to the campsite. And they had found who they believed had robbed the bank. The campsite was located just yards away from the University of Florida campus, and it was in within walking distance to all of the Gainesville crime scenes.
Oh, wow.
So now they began going through that evidence with a different lens. They were looking into it as related and connected to the five Gainesville murders. In that evidence, they found a screwdriver that matched the size and type of the one that was used to gain entry to the homes.
They found
a military-issued knife, which matched the murder weapon. And they found a tape recorder with a cassette tape inside. So they played the tape. On the tape, there was a man's voice who was talking about his life, all of his faults, how much he loved his family, and how he was just kind of a bad guy, a drifter, a wanderer who had gone wrong.
Sounded like Pee Wee Herman to me. A drifter, Dottie.
Stop it.
Sorry.
There were also multiple country songs, so like a man playing a guitar and singing country music songs. The lyrics of some of the songs were very haunting. They said things like, you're a killer, you're a drifter gone insane, you're a rebel, no one can tame you. And at the very end of the tape, the man said in a very clear voice, this is Danny Harold Rowland.
Nail in the coffin.
Boom. They knew Danny was the bank robber. Danny had most definitely been within yards of these crime scenes. So he became their prime suspect. Because he was already in prison, police were able to get a warrant for a DNA sample. And it was determined that Danny was a secretor and he had type B blood. So this is the same that was found at all five of the crime scenes in Gainesville, or on all five victims. So Danny Rowling, who was already incarcerated for robbery, was charged with five counts of first-degree murder for the killings of Christina Powell, Sonia Larson, Krista Hoyt, Tracy Pauls, and Manuel Tabota. He pleaded not guilty to the murders.
Okay.
Right. I mean, that's what you do.
We don't believe you, though.
I don't know. We're not going to believe you. Not for 1 minute. So Ed Humphrey, the 18-year-old kid who was actually named a suspect in the murders originally, was still in prison for the assault on his grandmother, but was officially exonerated of the five Gainesville homicides. He actually participated in one of the documentaries that I watched, and he was very gracious, actually, and he said that he understood why he was a suspect because he was not taking his medication properly and that he knew he was behaving in a questionable way. And he admitted he was mentally ill. He wasn't taking care of himself. He was like, I get it.
All right.
I know. And he seems like he's doing fine.
That's so sad, though, to know, to have the I mean, it's wonderful now if he's taking care of himself now, but to know that you were in a period of your life where these things were happening and it was maybe a direct effect or indirect effect because of how your mental health was, and to be aware of that, it makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. It's sad, yeah. They definitely jumped to a conclusion based on surface level things.
And mm-hmm. yeah, and fear.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the whole community in fear. I get it too, but
mm-hmm. yeah, he was one of those kind of guys that was convicted by the the people in his area. Mm-hmm. Eventually, facing all of the evidence that was against him, Danny actually agreed to confess to the crimes, but he did so in a really unconventional way. So he had befriended another inmate and said that he would only confess through him, because the things that he had done, he himself could not even speak of.
Oh, wow. Hmm.
Yeah, almost like they embarrassed him to say them out loud. So it was a really odd interview. You can watch it. They ask him a question, and Danny whispered his answers to this inmate. And then the inmate just said what he said. It was very strange.
He's like a ventriloquist.
That is absolutely unacceptable. You're okay whispering it into somebody's ear what you did and making them repeat what you did, but actually just say it.
No, it fits because he was a peeping Tom. Like, he doesn't actually want you to know, that he's watching you, and all these murders were posed, and like, he didn't want anyone to know. I mean, it kind of fits like everything he's done.
Mm-hmm. Right. He definitely has that like voyeuristic vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually, in his confessions, gave an overwhelming amount of detail about the crimes that only the killer would know. So things about the mutilation. In one part, he even said that his last victim, Tracy Pauls, who was the fifth person that he had killed in Gainesville, she woke up because he had killed her roommate, and she was trying to run away from him. And finally he caught up to her, and she realized that she wasn't going to get away. And she literally said to him, "You're him, aren't you?" And he was like, "Yep." So she knew who he was.
Wow. Oh my God.
So he admitted to this extreme voyeuristic behavior. He said that he had stalked and watched his victims before killing them. He planned out his crimes in great detail and even went back to one of the crime scenes to continue mutilating and posing one of the bodies.
My goodness.
Yep. Danny claimed that he had been possessed by a demon named Gemini, who took over his spirit and caused him to commit the murders. Gemini is the demon from the movie The Exorcist 2. In which Danny admitted to watching
that old alibi. It was a demon.
Another horror movie. Oh, that wasn't based. Oh, it was based on true events.
The Exorcist. Yes, Scream is based on this movie. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I don't know about the Exorcist. That Exorcist movie.
I don't know about the second one, but
oh, it's three. I'm sorry, I said two, but I meant three. Exorcist 3 is the one that has Gemini in it. Sorry.
Wait, I thought that the new Exorcist movie was like already out, like the new one. I thought that was like the sequel. I didn't know there were multiple Exorcist movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I need to deep dive.
Next year. So even though Danny changed his plea to guilty, he was still facing the death penalty. So a jury had to rule on what his sentencing would be. So all of the evidence was presented in a sentencing trial in 1994. Danny was sentenced to death by lethal injection by a unanimous jury of his peers, and he sat on death row for 12 years, never appealing his sentence.
Never?
He had the automatic appeal, which happens with the death sentence, but mm-hmm. he never actively tried to get it overturned.
That's a first.
Yes, I think he was done, hopefully. Mm-hmm. On October 25th of 2006, at the age of, I said 39, but I think it's 49. Danny Rowland was executed by the state of Florida for the 5 Gainesville murders. He chose not to say any final words before his death, but instead sang gospel hymns. the entire time.
Okay. I wonder what Hawk Mule was.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like Christy is really, like, you like to look those up, don't you? Those
last names. I find it fascinating. That
should have been a fun fact. Mm-hmm.
I know, it could have, yeah. Just before his execution, Danny provided a handwritten note in which he confessed to the three murders of the Grissom family in Shreveport, Louisiana. So this makes his victim count a total of 8 people in 10 months.
Do you think there was more than that?
You think that he confessed to and right, was connected to?
Okay.
I mean, his MO was so specific.
Mm.
If he stuck to it, they would connect him, I feel like, because of the way that he posed the body so specifically and all that. Mm-hmm. But it's possible.
But I mean, like, other serial killers, like, they always, like, and I always use the Golden State Killer, but he escalated. Like, he didn't do
it there was
first.
A starting point. I wonder what his was.
Yeah. So there is rumor that he did rape women prior to that first triple murder, that he was known for doing that. But he was never convicted of any of that or none of that. Well, so
even as a secretor?
What does that have to do with anything? Stop it.
I find it fascinating. Like, I never heard that term before. He's a secretor.
Like, I'm with you. Like, and it catches me off guard when the second time she said it. I'm like, what? A secretor? Yeah. I forgot about that word. Anyway.
I guess something.
I guess the Peeping Tom would be maybe the starting point.
Yeah. Right. And that he was a teenager when that, like, young teen.
Oh,
when
he
started
maybe.
That.
Maybe that was his. Yeah. And and from there, it is going to escalate because that's very situational.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been in jail before for the robberies and things like that. So he was a criminal. So Scream, back to the movie. The writer, Kevin Williamson, came up with the concept to write the screenplay while watching an ABC special on our guy, Danny Roland, who is now known as the Gainesville Ripper. Hmm. He said, which is funny that you said this, Christy, that he was watching the documentary and looked out his window and noticed that they were open and got really freaked out because he thought, oh my gosh, somebody could be looking and watching me right now and planning to come in and kill me and my family. And so he came up with this screenplay that he originally called Scary Movie.
Doesn't have quite the same.
Isn't that what this
is? That's what the spoof was.
Mm-hmm. He was like, I don't know what to call this. It's scary. I'm just going to call it that. And the whole premise that he wanted to write about was because Danny Rowling had based his murders on this demon that he had gotten from a horror movie, and he stalked and watched young women before killing them and then mutilated their bodies in very depraved theatrical like ways and like kind of laid out these scenes for police to walk in on.
Hmm.
And that, what do you say?
It's all about the drama.
All about the drama with him, absolutely. So that is the true story of how the Scream movie was born. And now there are 5.
Yeah.
And it's also the case of 8 innocent victims whose lives were actually taken in real life by a monster. So
I don't know that I've seen all 5. Have you all seen all 5?
No, I quit after the first.
I have seen 4. I haven't seen the one that they just rebooted with Jenna. What's her name? Jenna Ortega.
Yeah, I think
Wednesday.
I didn't even know she was in it.
Yeah, and I think there's plans to make another one.
Yeah.
With her, there's like
I get it now because like in the original Scream movie, there was that guy that was it. He killed his mom, killed her mom, Sydney's mom.
Mm.
Yeah, so her boyfriend ends up being the one, him and a friend are the ones that end up being. Who is it that kills the mom?
Yeah, but he's out, and or did he get out on the technicality?
So Cotton Weary was the one who was charged with it, but he did not do it.
Right.
Okay. So that's similar to the other guy that just went to jail.
Yeah, he went to jail and was
Yeah, yeah.
He like won. I think he won an appeal or something in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was determined he was wrongfully convicted.
Yeah, yeah. he was wrongfully convicted.
Yeah, wow, that's so similar.
The mask is nothing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of parallels to it. So do any of you guys know the killer's name in the movie Scream? The guy? Do you know what his actual name is?
Ghostface, right?
Ghostface, yep.
Yeah.
I wondered if any of you knew that. Also, I just want to point out my earrings. I don't know if you guys saw these.
Oh, I can see them now.
So I love them. So there's this little boutique that is a friend of my family who makes them. It's called Trailer Classy. And they're on Facebook. And she does a really good job. And she had these. I was ordering something for my daughter and found these and was like, I have to have them. They're Scream earrings.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's that, the Gainesville Ripper and the true story behind Scream. But before we wrap up, we do want to uphold one of your traditions at What Happens in the Woods, famous episode traditions, and invite our friend to share something special with you. So here she is. And here we have our girl Cass with some fun facts. What do you have for us?
Oh, hi. Okay.
Hi.
How are we doing? Everything good? Okay. All right. So, did you know? I was kind of like, okay, so it's like Halloween time. We're doing spooky, right? We love the little bash. Okay, so what's everyone's favorite animal?
Oh. Elephant?
Okay, scary animal. I should rephrase.
Oh. Werewolf. I was going to say baby sea lions.
Specifically baby.
Baby sea lions, yes.
A werewolf.
Werewolf, okay. Yeah. Or a bat.
That's not mythical.
Okay, bat.
Just a wolf. A wolf in general for me. Is this, okay. Does that count?
Okay, you guys are so off, but it's fine. I'll give it to you. Okay. It's fine. You've picked great things.
That I didn't know there was a wrong
answer.
Oh, there's a wrong answer?
There. Well, technically all the answers have been wrong, but it's fine. Okay, wow. So my favorite scary animal that's not my favorite, spiders. That
no. No. No.
It's not an animal. Okay, thank you.
Well, technically. I mean, anyway. So humans and other species, what color is their blood?
Red.
Red.
Blue. Blue. Till it meets oxygen and then red, we're getting technical. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You didn't have to get technical. Okay. Anyway. Most animals have red blood due to the iron in their hemoglobin.
Mm-hmm.
But spiders have blue blood due to the presence of copper-based hemocyanin in their blood. So yeah, spiders have blue blood.
Does theirs turn red when it hits oxygen?
No. Okay. It does not.
Interesting.
That's weird.
So, I've never looked, like when I've squished them, I've never looked to see what kind of blood.
I mean, it all looks black. Like just it smushed. Just looks like a smushed black blob.
I mean, it's disgusting. I run from spiders. I don't kill them. That is someone else's job. I'm not trying to do that.
I just suction mine up with the vacuum.
Oh, yeah, ice mushroom.
It's going to lay babies in there.
Oh.
Well, and then I immediately take out the thing and dump it. Well, and
it's going to lay babies in your backyard.
Yeah. Well,
that's fine.
I definitely smush the spiders, but I don't do cockroaches. So it's somebody else's job for a cockroach. And I have a stupid story, but we used to get them in Florida all the time. And I would just put cups upside down on top of them. And then Emery would come home and there'd be a line of cups. And he's like, I guess I have to kill the roaches.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Those are nasty. Anyway.
I will say I've never killed a spider and seen red blood. And I've killed a lot of spiders because I'm savage.
We love that. I love
savage. Go you on. Don't need anybody to kill your spiders.
I'm actually floored by this knowledge because Beth hates spiders and like screams. So I'm shocked she sticks around to kill them.
Well, I've had to save my own life, obviously.
Exactly.
My children's life. Mm-hmm. And I just don't want them to go somewhere else. That's my thing. So if I see them, I'm like, let's neutralize the threat right now.
Mm-hmm. So and I've never done that. You have seen a moment.
Red blood.
You panic. You panic first, and then you square up and you deal with it like a boss who would deal with the situation. That's what we do.
I would say there's a step in between in which I call a friend.
Emotional support.
And should they not be able to make it, then I kill the spider. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On my own.
I don't know if I could ever live alone because someone else needs to kill the spider.
Oh, I've definitely found big spiders and been like, cool, we're moving.
Mm-hmm. You burn it down.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You have your waiting to exhale moment. You light the match, you throw it, it all burns down. Hopefully the spider goes with it.
I don't like spiders. They have so many legs.
So you can't, we've had this conversation before, but you can't go to Australia during that time where they're all just flying everywhere.
Dude, we were just talking about this at dinner the other day. We were talking about having a Christy and Beth or like a Scolden trip and how we can't go during that season. Mm-hmm. And then Jackson, my oldest, was like, yeah, we can. It'd be hilarious.
No. Mm-mm.
To what? Like, traumatize everybody?
They, right. Mm-hmm. They're spiders that fall out of the skies. They have a spider season.
Yes.
Guys.
Heck no.
Yeah. They fall out of the skies from the clouds because they float up in the air. Thousands and thousands of spiders. I don't know how they do this because they're some kind of magical demons. And they fly up in the air and just come down and land on you. I don't even know. They lay babies and their babies come. It's just not my thing. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. I think Australians are super strong human beings because,
you know,
they're warriors, all of them.
You know, I've partied with Australians and I can confirm they are a different breed of human.
It's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. My husband says the same thing. He is partners with people in Australia and he is like, I dare you to take one of them to a pub.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Yes, he's like, they are different people. They have lived through some things like spider season.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm arachnophobic as well, and I can't deal with it.
So we have this haunted house here. It's called Panic Point. And it's different, like, there's different, like, buildings you can go in, and one is like a haunted farmhouse and a haunted circus house. And one of them is a spider house. Mm-mm. And you go in and they literally have like cobweb things everywhere and spiders drop on your heads. And my hairdresser was just telling me that she took her kids there and she was like, I literally crawled out of it on my hands and knees in tears, almost vomiting.
Oh
no. That sounds horrible.
That does
sounds
awful. Like why would you do that to yourself?
I know. I remember it's that terrible. Movie.
That movie was horrible. I had nightmares about never taking showers and, you know, because the showers, it's
literally horrible. My father made me watch, tried to make me watch Arachnophobia. And that was the part that I saw was the shower scene.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter
what.
They
come out of the drain, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And okay. I have to have my eyes open in the shower. Otherwise, I'm just sure I'm going to die.
So you always get like shampoo in your eyes.
Yes. It's horrible. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible chain of events.
To get one of those visors for babies. You know, the visors that they put on their foreheads for babies so that it just drips.
But then she can't wash her hair properly.
Well, no, it's made for like, that. It goes here.
Yeah, it goes for here. And it goes across like under the ear, like sunglasses, but it goes across your forehead. So the water just comes down to right here and then it goes out on the visor and then comes down in front of you. So it doesn't actually like.
So you can wash your baby's hair without getting soap in there.
Yeah.
But Cass has long hair.
It'll work. She'll get it.
Maybe dry shampoo. An adult one. Dry just shampoo doesn't. No.
$1 million idea.
You know, maybe
maybe that's how you make it.
This is how we make it.
Yes.
Me
adult
and you, Cass.
Adult shower visors.
Adult spider, arachnophobia.
Yes. Yeah.
You would cater to a lot of people. Yeah.
I think so, too.
You would cater to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? You've heard it here first. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about nobody taking this idea.
TM, ladies
and gentlemen.
Yep. Copyrighted. Whatever.
Trademarked.
Reclaim this.
Yeah. That's right. Thank you so much, Cass, for your fun fact. Thank you for joining us in the closet.
Of course.
If you guys don't know her, she makes features over on What Happens in the Woods all the time. She's fantastic. Go and find her on Fun Facts. And we love you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I love you guys, too. Thank you for having me.
Anytime.
Okay. Wow. We've officially wrapped up our fourth year. Yeah? Right? We determined that.
Yeah.
Our Halloween collab. How fun.
Round of applause.
Yay. This was... surprised.
What?
Congratulations.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
What did you say? For joining us.
For joining us, guys, and continuing this tradition. I know we will continue to do it. We just can't stop now. But it's been so fun to hang out with you guys again. And I don't know. I'm just thrilled. And I think all of the stories that we told were really cool. I'm going to say this. Bryce's was my favorite.
Good job. I agree. Just means that you should speak more often.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It kind of broke stuff up a little bit because it wasn't like crimey, but
not a murder.
Right. Right. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, it broke it up and we kind of had a lot of fun with it. And Beth.
But it did. I tell you, it has probably scarred a lot of people, that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the amount of gagging faces that Beth made that I would love to post after all this is done.
I have a hard time just looking at the movie cover.
Yeah.
So, I survived.
You only did. You survived.
Only
survived.
For you.
Well, if you haven't already done so, go over to their feed and check their our other cases out. If you haven't done that already, at What Happens in the Woods. And I don't know. I don't think we have anything else. Cass, thanks for joining us on ours. And we hope to get you back in here again sometime. That would be fantastic if you would be willing to do that. And just always remember to stay out of the damn woods.
Stay out of the woods.
It's no good.
Thanks, guys.